You're listening to local and regional news on KMUN. I'm Katie Frankowitz. We're going to start with news out of Washington State. Despite a statewide ban on thin, single-use plastic shopping bags, Washington has seen an increase in plastics used for retail transactions. That's due to a loophole allowing thicker plastic bags. A proposal to fix this will go before lawmakers in January. KNKX Environment reporter Bellamy Palethorpe has the story.
The thicker bags were to be made with increasing amounts of recycled plastics. But for communities that enthusiastically passed bag bans in the 2000s, this proliferation has been confusing. Maggie Use is a legislative liaison for Seattle Public Utilities.
For Seattle, this meant a complete resurgence in plastic bags in stores. And on top of that, the bags are now four times thicker than the previous thin plastic bags.
A recent study showed that although the distribution of thin plastic bags dropped by half in Washington, total plastic used went up 17%. Jurisdictions like Seattle are pushing for a new statewide ban on these thicker bags. Bag manufacturers and retailers oppose this, saying it disregards the investments they made in recycling plastics into those thicker bags, as well as the need for consumer choice. I'm Bellamy Palethorpe reporting.
Washington Governor Bob Ferguson has joined Democrats calling for an income tax on millionaires. KUOW's Scott Greenstone has more.
Washington hasn't had an income tax for nearly a century. Efforts to change that have died at the ballot box. But Ferguson says it's time.
To make our tax system more fair, millionaires should contribute more towards our shared prosperity.
Democratic leaders in the legislature want nearly 10% taxes on incomes over $1 million annually. Ferguson says he will work with them to pass that proposal next year, but expects challenges in court and at the ballot box. Washington State Republican Party Chairman Jim Walsh called the idea a joke and patently unconstitutional. I'm Scott Greenstone in Seattle.
You're listening to KMUN. A new electrical transmission line will be built across Clark County in the coming years. OPB's Eric Newman reports the project is already creating conflicts between communities and the power company responding to the growing demand for electricity.
Patrick Barunda lives off a winding road under the shadow of tall Douglas fir trees in Yakult, Washington. Downhill from his modest house is a pasture and a barn where he and his wife spent years raising alpacas. The community is quiet, he says.
For the most part, people pretty much stay to themselves.
Barunda moved to Yakult in the mid-1990s. When they bought their home, they took a gamble on an easement on the edge of their property. The buffer of land was owned by the electricity company PacifiCorp. Nothing had happened with the easement for about 50 years. They reasoned,
if they haven't used it by now, why would we turn down purchasing this property?
That all changed in the past year when Barunda and his neighbors got word that PacifiCorp plans to build a power transmission line right across the edge of their property. It'll be part of a 40-mile power line stretching across Clark County. It'll span the Columbia River to feed electricity to Troutdale, Oregon. The thought of a 100-foot overhead power line has brought up a range of worries for residents. Wildfire risks, herbicides contaminating groundwater, and lost property values being a few.
Essentially, we're in the woods right now. And all of a sudden, we're going to be in the middle of a huge clearing.
So now, Barunda and a handful of neighbors are lobbying the electric company to reroute the transmission line. Their group goes by the name Move the Line East, and that's exactly what they hope to do. Their idea is the power line could be built further east on federally managed land in the Gifford-Pinchot National Forest.
If it goes through the Gifford-Pinchot, until you get down around the hatcheries, it's open land.
This conflict between communities and a utility company is just one example of the challenges of remaking the electric grid to address growing power needs in the Northwest. Electricity demand is increasing in Washington and Oregon from new data centers, electric vehicle use, and coal-fired power plants closing. PacifiCorp says its Clark County project will help meet these future needs while lowering costs for customers. Simon Gutierrez is a spokesperson for the utility.
But this is a need that we've identified to provide and continue providing safe, reliable electricity to our customers.
Construction on the project won't begin until 2028 at the earliest, so Gutierrez lately has been meeting with residents to talk about their concerns.
Part of the route is pretty much sealed because it's an existing easement the company purchased many years ago. Property owners should have been aware of that easement, so this shouldn't have been a surprise for folks.
Gutierrez says the electricity will be for residential use around Portland. The possibility of using it for data centers is, quote, ongoing and fluid. Clark County Councilor Sue Marshall represents a large area the new transmission line would cut through. She says she's worried about wildfires and PacifiCorp using eminent domain to take property it doesn't own. But she says moving the power line east onto federally managed land would create a new set of concerns for forests, streams, and wetlands.
Each potential path, you'd have to really look at the pros and cons of all of that. And the least impactful, I would imagine PacifiCorp is looking at the least costly.
There's reason to worry about power lines and wildfires. Last month, PacifiCorp said it had settled 4,200 wildfire claims since the 2020 Labor Day fires at a price tag of $1.6 billion. The company was found to be negligent for not cutting electricity as wildfires were spreading across Oregon during a high wind event. Since then, PacifiCorp has added heightened safety settings for its electrical equipment, and it proactively shuts off power during periods of extreme fire risk. What happens when communities get in the crosshairs of energy projects is a topic that's familiar to Alida Cantor. She's an associate professor of geography at Portland State University. She says there are a few questions that always come up with energy projects like this, like are communities involved in the process, and are there better alternative sites?
If there are going to be impacts on communities, how can those be not just mitigated, but like actually compensated for in a way where communities feel good about it?
Residents in Clark County probably don't have much leverage over the transmission line since PacifiCorp owns the land it plans to develop. One option, Cantor says, would be for the company to work with the community just to maintain goodwill.
It might be in their interests to, you know, come to some kind of agreement with the community or work with the community, even if they don't technically have to.
At this point, Barunda and his group are mostly trying to educate residents about what the project could mean for Clark County. They hope the county or state will step in to decide if a company like PacifiCorp or a group of concerned citizens know what's best for the region. I'm Eric Newman reporting.
Governor Bob Ferguson announced on Friday that a portion of Highway 2 will reopen north of Leavenworth to Stevens Pass, allowing the ski resort to open. Near the summit, a pilot car will guide vehicles to the ski area on one open lane. But State Transportation Secretary Julie Meredith said it will still take months to fully reopen the 49-mile stretch of highway cut off by storm damage earlier this month.
Reopening a road is not just about clearing what you can see. After storms like these, the greatest dangers are often the hidden ones. Washed out roadbeds, unstable slopes, undermined bridges, and saturated soils. Every decision our department makes to whether reopen a road or not is grounded in safety for the public first.
The partial reopening began today. There is still no estimate for the cost of repairs. The Washington State Standard reports the governor will tour the damage to Highway 2 in Skykomish Tuesday as the west side remains closed. You're listening to KMUN. You're listening to local and regional news on KMUN. Here's our last story out of Washington. Wenatchee veterans don't have a local Veterans Affairs Center. That's left veterans there struggling to access resources. Now, one group is hosting a weekly game night to help build community among veterans. NWPB's Murrow Fellow Renee Diaz has more. A heads up, this story talks about mental health challenges.
On a weeknight inside a card shop in Wenatchee, tables are set up for a game with mythical beasts, spells, and creatures. It's for a game known as Magic the Gathering. Zach Knight, a Marine veteran, and Kevin Coleman, a U.S. Army veteran, sit at Core Cards and Collectibles. They meet here every Tuesday and battle it out with a deck of cards. As they set up the night's game, they explain how it all works.
It's a fantasy card game. You can build whatever kind of deck you want to build. You can build it off demons or angels or dragons. And
you take out the other person's life total.
It's all luck-based, just like a casino. But you get to design how the deck works.
Combat in the game is low stakes by design. You choose your attackers, your blockers, and weigh the risks. This group is known as Veterans the Gathering. Coleman says it's a safe place for him.
It's like a big brotherhood. We crack jokes on each other and make each other feel better. And if any of us are down, we've got any one of them to talk with.
Paul Staback, Coleman's therapist, organized the weekly gathering in Wenatchee. Staback is a chapter president of Combat Veterans International, a nonprofit that provides services and organizes the games. He used to work at Central Washington Veterans Counseling, but with uncertainty about federal and state funding, his contract was terminated.
Veterans Day was my last day providing mental health services in Wenatchee. I knew that was going away. I was trying to find another outlet for them.
But Coleman says it's challenging to find help. He says he lost several of his friends to suicide.
What makes it important is so we could keep the heroes, my brothers and sisters, alive.
Staback says negative stereotypes about veterans are also challenging.
When we have things like happened with Decker at Leavenworth, that stokes fear into people because Hollywood highlights, you know, violent behavior, and it does create fear and uncertainty.
Travis Decker was wanted in connection with the killing of his three daughters this summer. He was found dead. Decker was a veteran, and that detail saw a lot of coverage.
When there's already an absolute bias in society about veterans, especially with PTSD, with the potential for being violent, and then you throw in this horrifically violent tragedy that just by mentioning what groups they belong to associates others with it, that's challenging. My clients really struggled.
This space gives them the opportunity to talk with people who can understand the issues veterans face.
Having that space where they can come together, not have to worry about sounding too aggressive, could be off-putting for somebody who hasn't experienced it. And being able to be their authentic selves within this group is really important.
Katie McNamara works at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. She specializes in treating individuals with job-related trauma, like veterans. McNamara says that while games like Magic can't be replaced for therapy, games like these can be helpful because
people are in their prefrontal cortex, not their fight or flight, and they are calmly interacting with fictional characters. They're able to just relax into safety.
The concept of Veterans the Gathering is spreading. Other card shops in Washington started their own versions. I'm Renee Diaz reporting.
Let's get into this game.
Turning now to news from Oregon. The Siletz tribes want to prohibit motorboats on part of the Siletz River in Lincoln County. OPB's April Ehrlich reports.
The Oregon State Marine Board is considering changing boating rules for part of the Siletz River after receiving a petition from the Confederated Tribes of Siletz Indians. The tribes say motorboats are loud, and they enable some anglers to overfish certain areas. Angela Sondenaugh, the Siletz Tribe's Natural Resources Director, says motorboats can also harm fish and the environment.
Though what we're seeing is that these boat motors, especially in the shallower water, have the potential to disrupt spawning beds. And that's our biggest concern in regards to fish.
The tribes want to prohibit motorboats along the upper half of the Siletz River, which borders the town of Siletz. The Oregon State Marine Board expects to make a decision by fall 2026. I'm April Ehrlich, reporting.
Back in November, Benton County Commissioners approved an expansion of the Coffin Butte landfill, located north of Corvallis, giving the facility capacity to operate for an estimated 6 additional years. This was welcome news for the Tillamook County Solid Waste Program, which transports all 30,000 tons of waste generated in the county annually to the landfill. However, Solid Waste Program Manager Justin Weiss says the county still needs to explore alternatives to the site. While Benton County leaders may opt for another expansion in the future, Weiss says eventually Tillamook County will need to find another resource. Tillamook County has used the Coffin Butte landfill to dispose of the majority of solid wastes for at least a decade. One site in Tillamook County originally operated as a landfill, but was capped in the middle of the 20th century. Weiss says he does not see a new landfill within Tillamook County as a viable possibility. The closest landfills, aside from Coffin Butte, are located in eastern Oregon around the Dalles or Boardman. That distance would require trash to first be hauled to the Portland area and placed on trains for shipment, which would increase costs. The Tillamook County Community Health Centers will be closing its Rockaway Beach Clinic effective Wednesday. The last patient clinic day was December 11th. Over the past 14 years, the Rockaway Beach Clinic has gradually reduced operations from 3 days a week to 2 days per month as patient demand declined. According to the clinic, it served fewer than 60 patients now. Tillamook County Community Health Center's administrator Marlene Putman says closing the clinic was a difficult decision, but that they're working with patients to support them during the transition. Patients are able to continue receiving care through the organization's Tillamook Central Clinic in Tillamook beginning January 1st. Public Health will continue to provide WIC services in North County at a location still to be determined. These stories come to us through a news partnership with the Tillamook Headlight Herald, online at tillamookheadlightherald.com. Small groups have been gathering throughout rural Oregon this holiday season with a single goal: counting birds. It's part of the annual Christmas count for the National Audubon Society. OBB's Bryce Dole reports.
Groups have been driving and walking near towns like Baker City, Pendleton, and Joseph. Holding binoculars and cameras, they're looking for any birds they can find: songbirds, raptors, ducks, and much more. These events have been around in eastern Oregon for decades. Sean Cozart organized the count in Baker County for the past 4 years.
And I know for a lot of these people, there's also a certain age that you hit, and suddenly you start noticing all the birds.
Cozart was one of two people this weekend who said their groups counted fewer birds compared to previous years, though they don't yet have a final tally. The U.S. North American Bird Conservation Initiative released a report this year saying American bird populations were declining, quote, across the board. The bird count continues through January 5th. I'm Bryce Dole, reporting.
You're listening to KMUN News. If you have a news tip or story idea, get in touch with us. Email us at news1@kmun.org. That's news, the numeral 1, at kmun.org. Local and regional news on KMUN is brought to you by our news partners and by the KMUN News Team. That includes host and producer Skylar Butenshin, news intern Sylvia Thorpe, and me, news director Katie Frankowitz. That's all from us today. This is KMUN.